appreciate it. I'm a big fan.
I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got warrants in the name. If you come around, hey, we working all day. Your life gon' pass you in a second if you wait. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got warrants in my name. If you come around, hey, we working all day. Your life gon' pass you in a second if you wait. Just like Jesse James when I'm sitting on trains. Every step we get, it's 7 o'clock in that game. Dog food for dinner, the world is in flames. Bonafide hustlers making that change. Just like Jesse James when I'm sitting on trains. Every step we get, it's 7 o'clock in that game. Dog food for dinner, the world is in flames. Bonafide hustlers making that change. Now all they wanna do is enter and take your money. All they wanna do is enter and take your money.
Paper Planes by Street Sweeper Social Club. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to the largest private sector labor election in nearly 70 years. The stakes are enormous, and it could have sweeping ramifications for the future of healthcare unions. The battle is over which union will win the right to represent the interests of some 43,000 employees in the largest hospital chain in California, Kaiser Permanente. Workers will choose between the Giant Service Employees International Union, or SEIU, and the much smaller breakaway National Union of Health Workers, or NUHW. The election is happening as a result of a decision by the National Labor Relations Board, which was petitioned a year and a half ago by healthcare workers who wanted to be represented by NUHW. In January of 2009, dissident leaders left the SEIU's United Healthcare Workers West and formed a National Union of Healthcare Workers. They now have about 6,000 members, and after 18 months of legal delays and workplace skirmishes, the stage is set for a decisive showdown between the two unions. Voting is by mail-in ballot and begins this week. The vote count begins in early October. For more, I'm joined here in New York by Mark Brenner, the director of Labor Notes. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Great to be here, Juan.
Tell us, in summary, what the stakes are here between this very small breakaway group led by Sal Roselli and the giant 800-pound gorilla of the labor movement, SEIU.
Well, I mean, I think that really for me, what this really represents is two things. Number one, who's actually going to be in charge of the unions that 16 million people are members of still in our country? Is it going to be folks who are in D.C., folks who've never actually worked a day in their life in the bargaining units that they're representing? And second, who's going to be in charge of our relationship with our boss? I mean, you know, the labor movement was founded, you know, by people who basically said, we want to get together. We want to actually control, have some modicum of say over our relationship with our employer. And, you know, that's essentially been taken away little by little from a lot of workers around the country and concentrated in, especially in SEIU's case, in a small number of people's hands who, you know, are far removed from the daily struggles of workers in the job. And so this is really about putting those two things back in the hands of the members. Which to me couldn't be any more important for the future of our labor movement or for actually figuring out a way to grow again. Because I think members are sort of the missing ingredient in how we're going to rebuild this labor movement of ours.
Well, obviously, the SEIU leadership believes that this movement to try to challenge their representation is actually weakening the labor movement, is creating divisions within it that are unnecessary at a time when labor is under such continued assault by corporations and their supporters throughout the country. Your response to that concern?
Well, I mean, fortunately, they don't get to make the decision about who represents the workers. The workers get to make that decision themselves. Now, of course, they're going to spend millions of dollars to influence that decision. But I find it kind of ironic because, you know, earlier this year when the Democrats were, whining and moaning about $10 million that the labor movement threw down the toilet, putting a primary challenger to Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, everyone defended our right to, you know, call our own shots, to be independent, to back who we wanted to back. And it wasn't the Democrats' decision. You know, White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel was famously, deriding this choice. And I feel like, well, it's the same situation here. You know, ultimately, the folks that work in those hospitals are the ones who get to decide who gets to represent them. I also think it's really important to back up and remember how we got here, Juan. This is not a situation of personalities or egos. I mean, this is a situation where systematically thousands and thousands of members in California who are part of this union, you know, SEIU, United Healthcare Workers West, said, this is how we want our union to be run. This is what we want in terms of our relationship with our employer. And SEIU, folks in D.C., many who had never actually worked a day in their life as a healthcare worker, said, no, you don't get to make that choice. You know, the people who formed the breakaway were not like, they didn't choose to do this. They were driven out of their own union, the union that they spent, decades building by folks in D.C. And so now they've done really all they've got left to do, which is to try to rebuild what they had going in California. And I think actually they'll be better for it because, you know, the struggle has really actually created a different spirit. It's really forced a new generation of healthcare workers to stand up for something and actually, you know, make some hard choices about how far they're willing to go for their union.
Now, the employer in this case, Kaiser Permanente, has publicly said that it is staying out of the fray, that this is a decision that the workers, their workers, have to make on their own. But yet some people have been saying that, at least in some of the previous organizing drives that NUHW won, Kaiser Permanente immediately penalized the workers who chose not to stay with SEIU. Could you talk about that?
I mean, this is one of the saddest things about this whole situation in California is that SEIU has been so desperate to hold on to these workers. They like their baseball trading cards or something that they're fighting to kind of keep in a box, that they've been willing to actually collaborate with employers to get NUHW supporters fired, to get people disciplined, to get them transferred, to basically make their lives a living hell for the choice that is their right to make. Kaiser's been no different. I mean, we've seen amazing amount of collaboration. I mean, I talk to people every day who, have supervisors following them around. You know, they show up after, you know, doing something for their job and their boss knows exactly where they are. Well, why do they know that? They know that because people who actually, they pay their salary, staffers for SEIU, are telling bosses all over the hospital system, you know, where the quote-unquote troublemakers are going. We've had people fired. We've had people disciplined. I mean, it's just amazing and actually just quite disgusting to see a union willing to go to so many lengths to collude with the employers to get really good trade union activists fired simply because they don't agree with the program that's being handed down from Washington. I think that's got to stop, and I think every trade unionist around the country actually should be standing up and saying that's a line that we're not willing to cross.
Well, at the same time, though, there are questions about the tactics that have been used by NUHW to get to this point. Sal Roselli, there was a trial in California where a jury ordered Roselli to pay back about $1.5 million in SEIU funds that apparently he illegally diverted before he and his group split away from SEIU. So there are questions as to some of the tactics of Roselli, no?
I think this is sort of the big lie that SEIU has been propagating in this case, and I wish we could just have an honest conversation about it. Basically, this is not a situation of corruption, although there's plenty of corruption to be found inside SEIU. They're facing a lot of scrutiny these days for how their officers and top leaders have been using member dues. This is a situation where a civil court said, look, for 2 weeks in January, the leaders of SEIU-UHW, Sal Roselli, John Borsos, and many others, were essentially doing what their members had voted that they wanted them to do. And because of the odd nature of labor law in this country, that doesn't count. What actually counts is what the parent union, SEIU International, wanted and what the executive board of that body had voted. And for the 2 weeks when they were essentially disagreeing with and disobeying kind of an edict from Washington, they had to repay the money that was spent by the union that they were in charge of at that time back to the international. I mean, it would have been a choice I would have made because it was what the members wanted. And I think ultimately that is the sort of irony of this whole thing is that they are being penalized and people are having liens put on their homes and their wages garnished by SEIU. It's a really ugly fight here, Juan. over essentially doing what was the democratic will of the members in that local. And that's the thing that SEIU can't contest. They can't argue that this was an autocratic regime. They can't argue that people weren't elected to run this union, that members didn't have a say. They absolutely did. They're essentially propagating the big lie that this is a corruption problem, that Sal Rosselli was greedy, that he stole people's money. And that is absolutely, you know, not true, and it's not a leg that they can actually stand on.
Finally, I'd like to ask you what the implications of this are for the this entire reform wing of the labor movement, which gathered together a decade ago or 5 years ago under the Change to Win mantra. Now Andy Stern, the president of SEIU, has resigned. Anna Berger has left, who was the head of Change to Win. What does it mean for what the reformers were trying to do to shake up the labor movement?
Well, I mean, I think Change to Win is a dead man walking. It's just a matter of, you know, how long they're going to go before they give up the ghost and what they're going to do next. What it really, to me, demonstrates is that, you know, you're not going to reform this labor movement from above. You actually are going to only rebuild it from below. And the problem, as I said at the top of the show, is that people are really missing the key ingredient here, which is the members. I mean, we're not going to strategize our way out of this with some smart kids with laptops in Washington, D.C. This is actually going to have to be about re-engaging and re-energizing the militancy and, you know, possibility of millions of trade union members around the country. And right now, they feel like their unions are out to lunch. They don't see them every day when they go to work. They're in an undeclared war with their employers, and, you know, folks are too worried about the next midterm election or, you know, what's happening in state politics. And so we really have to actually reconnect with what union members care about and really re-inspire them to the kind of audacity and militance that really built this labor movement. And you know, forming a new federation and sort of proclaiming you're the John L. Lewis of the new 21st century labor movement, that's been proven dead wrong. And fortunately for us, we kind of can clear the decks now. Andy Stern and Anna Berger are gone, and we can try again. And I hope that it starts from the bottom up.
And in a few seconds we have left, your sense of whether Mary Kay Henry, the new leader of SEIU, will really make any departures from the Andy Stern policies of the past?
Well, I think she was smart enough to try to actually make peace with the, you know, with Unite Here and actually go around and spend some time repairing relationships. But, you know, the fact that she's willing to pursue this to the ultimate in here in California demonstrates to me that SEIU is completely broken away from its long tradition of struggle and civil rights.
Well, I want to thank you, Mark Brenner, from the Director of Labor Notes, for helping us analyze this important fight. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdel-Kadous, Aaron Mate, Anjali Comet, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, and Robbie Karen. Mike DiFilippo and Miguel Noguera are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant. I'm Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for listening.
Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
And the time is 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. They say it's always darkest before dawn. But that's not true. When the moon is out, especially, I don't understand how these sayings get started. It is pretty dark now, though. Not outside. I'm talking the metaphysical, symbolic type of darkness that pervades us all over. And today is one of those darkish days. It's kind of a funny dark day, though. I'm watching reports of the of how the new voting machines are doing here in New York, and it's a disaster, as I knew it would be. Oh boy! Check out any story about New York City and voting machines, and you'll find all the predictable problems are happening, where the technology just isn't working because it sucks, because it's set up badly. It's a stupid system that they've thrown together here. And that's not saying the old system was great, but the old system at least was somewhat constant and solid. Of course, there's the issue of maybe it wasn't actually doing anything. Maybe it was just there and you had no way of proving it. Okay, it's a valid point. But to replace it with this charade, this three-ring circus, and those of you in the local listening area who didn't vote today in the primary, actually, I encourage you, if you can vote in the primary, run over to your local polling place and try and figure it all out and try and see weaknesses in the system, because that's what we should be doing. People tell you, oh, don't mess with the voting machines. Don't try and screw things up. No, folks, I'm giving you permission. Try and screw things up. Try and mess with them, because this is our democratic right here of electing people and passing legislation and things like that, voting on referendums. If they take that away, if they compromise that in any way, you've lost everything. You've lost all your power. So yeah, you had better test the system to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing and that there's no way to completely subvert it or make it break down. Nobody had to actually try today in New York City. It broke down all on its own. There weren't enough scanning machines. Boy, that wasn't too hard to predict, was it? Yeah, I mean, how many of you have worked with computers, software, technology, whatnot, where a brand new improved version of something that you were using just fine is introduced and it doesn't work nearly as well, but you're told that it's working better and that, well, you just have to learn these new steps, but it was working fine the other way. Why do we have to change it? Oh, don't be such a stick in the mud. You have to change with the times or get left behind. Well, I got an idea. Why don't you get left behind and let us run things the way we want to run them? How about that? How about letting the people decide how things are going to work, how things are going to be designed, rather than trying to twist yourself into all kinds of uncomfortable positions just so that we can adapt to your lousy software writing abilities? Because that's what this is turning into. It's absurd. We've been devoting some time to this on Off the Hook over recent weeks, and just some of the quote-unquote advances are nuts. Whereas before, you'd simply walk in, sign your name, go into a private booth, pick who you want to vote for, and pull a lever, and you're done. Now you got to get a privacy sleeve, you've got to get a piece of paper, you've got to get a pen, you've got to do things just right. If you mark anything slightly wrong, it's going to come back, but you might not know that your vote's not going to count. You might think your vote counted when it actually didn't because of the poor software and how it's phrased. How do you respond to overvote? Proceed? How do you respond to that? Well, if you do it the wrong way, your vote doesn't count and you don't even know it. Sure would be nice if those big clunky voting machines counted your vote. Let's assume for a moment they did. You knew when you voted. You knew that throwing those switches meant that you were selecting that particular person or that particular referendum. So can't we just expand on that simplicity and move forward in that direction, rather than try and reinvent the wheel and have all kinds of ways that you can do things wrong? For instance, if you check a box instead of completely filling it in with a pen, it doesn't count. If you put an X, doesn't count. If you put a mark next to it, doesn't count. And the thing is, you won't know exactly what it is that you did wrong when it says overvote or whatever stupid message you get. You won't know. And yeah, I guess you're stupid because you don't know. Because you're not with it. You're not with all the people that design these things and don't have any problem. Didn't do that for me. Thing is, you're not designing this for your peers. You're designing this for everybody. You're designing this for the entire populace. So everybody needs to understand it. It needs to be simple. It needs to be something, yeah, I hate to use the word idiot-proof. But in this particular case, I question who the idiots really are. So yeah, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is livid. He's calling it a royal screw-up, completely unacceptable. New York deserves better than this. The time has come to fix it. Now, keep in mind, this is a primary. Today was a primary day. Nobody turns out for primaries. Very few people do. So to have this level of craziness on such a light day, wow, can you imagine what's going to happen in November? I can hardly wait. One voter said it was horrendous. There are about 35 people online standing there in a boiling, disgusting gym, and I have to leave, so I'll not be able to vote now. Could not vote. And one of the poll workers said it's a total mess in there. I think there are going to be people who are going to lose their votes. Well, can't say I'm surprised, but I am pretty disappointed in the way this has been handled because it was so easy to avoid. Yeah, you know, it's possible to introduce technology and make things work. Improve things. Make it better. But you have to have input. You have to have rigorous testing. You have to be open to all sorts of new ideas. And what they have here, it's just, it's crazy. There's no reason that you should have to, first of all, sit behind a desk in full view of everybody, losing your right to privacy when you were behind that curtain voting booth mechanism. No, now you're sitting at a desk. People can walk behind you. They're not supposed to, but they can. You can make eye contact with people across the room. Not cool. Not in my eyes, anyway. It puts a bit of pressure on you to, you know, hurry up or don't do that or something. You can't change your mind. If you mark that little bubble, guess what? You've marked it. You can't erase it. It's a pen. You have to get another one, but you can only do that a couple of times. Many's the time that I've changed my mind while inside the voting booth. Can't do that anymore. And then after it's all over, you think it's all over. It's not all over. You have to walk over to this scanner machine carrying a little card that you've been given for some reason. You have to slide it into an envelope in just the right way and then have the piece of paper slid out from the envelope into the scanner and hope nothing goes wrong. And if it does, well, then you got to go back and figure it all out. Yeah. That's so much better than simply throwing a lever. And yeah, you know what? The levers, maybe they didn't work as well as everybody wanted them to. So let's keep levers and add technology to them so that there's a paper trail, so that there's a quick method of doing things. I know this is possible. And I know there are other places where they do this already. I know there are much better designed systems. And I don't know why we didn't get those here. Why didn't we get those? Why did we get this cruddy system with all kinds of security issues on top of everything else? Well, November, I'll scope them out. I'm not registered with any party. Otherwise, I would have been there today scoping them out and having all kinds of fun. But I have to wait till November. And it'll be a blast. It really will be. Okay, speaking of screw-ups and things that weren't well thought out, you know those two beams of light that they put on every September 11th or around September 11th to remember the Twin Towers? Yeah, you can see them for miles, these beams of light pointing straight up into the sky. Well, turns out they had to be shut down on Saturday, which was 9/11, the big day, after about 1,000 confused birds flew into the powerful lights. Yeah, they got turned off at around 11 p.m. and turned back on a half hour later. I think they had to be turned off again because the birds came back. Now, originally, they were supposed to stay on until 6 o'clock in the morning. But what happens is that the birds are migrating this time of year. They're migrating down south. And if they spend the entire night circling around, all confused by the lights, well, they basically lose a day of travel there, and that's kind of important for them. So the Audubon Society apparently has the ability to turn the lights off. I didn't know this. They have a lot of power. The Audubon Society ordered the lights turned off, and they got their wish. Because the birds were confused. And yeah, you can blame the birds. You can say the birds are stupid. Stupid end users. They don't understand the system. Well, guess what? That system's been around a lot longer. The system the birds use, it's been around a lot longer than we have. And I think it's important to listen to them. So that's it as far as things that are gotten completely messed up in various ways. People trying to improve things. People thinking that they know better than the ways of nature and other things. Well, sometimes they don't. But it's always good to experiment. It's always good to try out new things and see what happens. All right, we have a couple of important features that we have to get to, as you well know. We want to take some phone calls again this week. And we'd like to get some new people. I know there's new people out there. As I mentioned, I was looking at access logs, because you can do that. When you're on the internet, you can look at access logs. I can't look at access logs over the air. I have no idea how many people are out there right now listening to us over the radio. That's a mystery. That's the magic of radio, actually. But I do know there are many, many people who either listen live or download the show. If you are listening live, please consider calling us and telling us your opinion on, well, let's say voting for one thing, voting machines, beams of light pointed straight up into the sky. Anything that might have happened this week in the news, perhaps mosque burning, not mosque burning, I'm sorry, there's a weird buzzing noise coming from the console. That always concerns me a little bit. Quran burning. Yes, that was a big story this past week. Yeah, so we can talk about that. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. We would certainly like to hear from you. But of course, as I said, we do have certain features that we have to get to.
The quest for Starbucks.
Here we go.
The final 16 profile. Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City is the capital and the largest city in the state of Oklahoma. The city's estimated population as of 2008 was 551,789, with an estimated metro area population of 1,206,142. The city was founded during the land run of 1889 and grew to a population of over 10,000 within hours of its founding. The city was the scene of the April 19, 1995 bombing attack of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, in which 168 people lost their lives. It was the worst terror attack in the history of the United States before the terror attacks of September 11, 2001, and remains the worst act of domestic terrorism in U.S. history. By the time Oklahoma was admitted to the Union in 1907, Oklahoma City had surpassed Guthrie, the territorial capital, as the population center and commercial hub of the new state. Soon after, the capital was moved from Guthrie to Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City was a major stop on Route 66 during the early part of the 20th century and was prominently mentioned in Bobby Troup's 1946 jazz classic Get Your Kicks on Route 66, later made famous by Nat King Cole. Post-war growth accompanied Oklahoma City's location as a major interchange on the interstate highway system, with the convergence of I-35, I-40, and I-44 in the city. Oklahoma City has a severe weather season from March through August, especially during April and May. Tornadoes have occurred in every month of the year. Oklahoma City has become one of the most tornado-prone cities in the United States. Since the time weather records have been kept, Oklahoma City has been struck by 9 violent tornadoes, 8 F4s, and 1 F5. On May 3, 1999, parts of southern Oklahoma City and nearby communities suffered one of the most powerful tornadoes on record, an F5 on the Fujita scale, with wind speeds topping 318 miles per hour. This tornado was part of the 1999 Oklahoma tornado outbreak. Oklahoma City, one of the final 16. Gotta tell you, it's getting exciting. It's getting interesting. You know, I'm getting all kinds of mail from people who are saying, "Wow, this is really happening. You guys are serious. You're really going to go to one of these cities. One of these Starbucks is going to be the first one you ever enter in your life." And yeah, it's true. It is true. You think we were kidding? Go to thefirststarbucks.com. You'll see. Not only will you see the full list of the 16 finalists, but you'll see the schedule for the remaining draws, and you'll see that December 7th, 2010, that's the final. That's when we find out where the first Starbucks I ever set foot in will be. And I believe the next drawing is the first Tuesday of October. That's what I was told. I don't know the exact date, but I'm told that's when we cut it down to eight. And presumably the dancers will be back. Nobody's heard from them. They're overseas somewhere. And all kinds of fun can be had. But for now, we're simply giving some profiles of the various cities that are still in the running. And yeah, it's fun. It's something. We'll get some of the mail later. If you're near any of the cities that we mention, please send us email otw@2600.com. We'd sure like to hear from you. Tea Party activists, yes, they're back in swing. A damp and enthusiastic crowd of self-proclaimed Tea Party patriots gathered at the U.S. Capitol building on Sunday for a second straight September 12th march on Washington. The collection of various groups and individuals, all supportive of the Tea Party movement, came together to protest what they consider to be out-of-control spending, excessive taxes, and a government run amok. Yeah, well, it's running amok, isn't it? Under the theme of Remember in November, if you can figure out how to work your polls, a reference to the upcoming midterm congressional elections, they warned both Democrats and Republicans that it was time for the American people to take back Congress. There's only one power on earth that's big enough to wreck this country, and that is big government, said former House leader Dick Armey, chairman of the Freedom Works group that organized the rally. Well, he ought to know, right? He was in big government, so he knows what it takes to wreck everything, right? Yeah. Quoting the film character Dirty Harry Callahan, he said, "A man's got to know his limitations." Is that really the person you want to molly yourself after? Dirty Harry, okay. All right, well, I guess that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it, as far as what this is all about? I believe we've gotten the Republican Party's attention, Army said, in reference to primary election victories by Tea Party-backed candidates over mainstream GOP foes in Kentucky, Alaska, and other states. Tea Party activists hope for similar success in Delaware. That's today. They hope for success in Delaware today for those primaries. I'd like to find out what actually happens. They're throwing their support behind candidate Christine O'Donnell in a GOP Senate primary against Representative Mike Castle. Before Sunday's rally, activists marched along Pennsylvania Avenue from the Washington Monument to the steps of the Capitol building, despite gray skies and persistent rain. Signs reflected their socially conservative views, with some marchers carrying the Revolutionary War-era banner of a coiled snake and the slogan, "Don't tread on me," while other signs read, "Less Marx, more Jefferson." It's incredible. I wonder what these people would feel if they really encountered Karl Marx and Marxist regimes and things like that. Boy, it's funny. It really is funny. It won't be so funny after November, though, if these people have their way. And if they do, it's because other people just don't care enough. Yeah, same old reason. Here we are in a battle for our lives and a battle for the future of this republic. I'd really like to know how they see it that way. Battle for your lives. In what sense exactly? What is it that you're battling for? Paying a few dollars less in taxes? Is that really what it's all about, even if that's true? Battle for your lives. Talk about stretching it just a tad. Anyway, Sunday's protest was the second September 12th rally in Washington following a similar event last year. Apparently, they're going to be adopting September 12th as their date to do this kind of thing. As the march proceeded, a few hecklers along Pennsylvania Avenue taunted activists, yelling that they were missing in action when the Bush administration added to the nation's debt. At the rally, the mention of top Democrats, including President Barack Obama and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, prompted loud booing from the mostly white middle-aged crowd. Yeah, but where were they? Yes, where were they during the Bush administration? Where were all the protests then? Which is the things that they're complaining about. The massive debt, the way the banks don't care about the money they steal. The ongoing wars, all of that was going on full swing in the Bush administration. That's how it got all the power, all the momentum that it has now. And these people were silent. There was no Tea Party then. So I don't believe anything they say on these issues. I think it's fear of a black president, or just fear of, Marxism. Sure, that's it. Really, these people need to take some kind of course or something and learn. Learn what politics is really all about. Learn what left versus right is, what other countries do. It's not that difficult.
The quest for Starbucks.
Already? Okay.
The final 16 profile. Rancho Cordova.
Rancho Cordova is a city in Sacramento County, California, that incorporated in 2003. The state of California estimates its population at 60,056 as of January 1st, 2008. The city is named after the Cordova Vineyard, which was located in the center of the Rancho Rio de los Americanos land grant. Original names of the town included Cordova Vineyards and Cordova Village before it was officially named Rancho Cordova when a post office was established in the community in 1955. PG&E had a serious pipeline explosion in Rancho Cordova in late 2008, leading to one death. A major contributing factor in that incident was the inability of workers to quickly identify the source of the leak and the utility's failure to evacuate the neighborhood, according to the National Transportation Safety Board, which investigated that accident and issued a report in May. Following that accident, the utility pledged to make changes in its safety program so that sort of thing would never happen again. The city of Rancho Cordova is located 12 miles east of Sacramento, the capital of California. The American River lines Rancho Cordova's northern border. Rancho Cordova is near the historic gold country and the Sierra Foothill wine country. Rancho Cordova, one of the final 16. I'm sorry, I apologize. I went a little off script there. I know I'm not supposed to do that, but I was just commenting on the fact that, PG&E said that would never happen again. It happened last week in another place in California. People killed, homes destroyed, that kind of thing. Will we ever learn? I don't think we'll ever learn. Just don't think it's going to happen. All right. So now the Koran burning thing, that's over. That's history. Didn't happen. Turned out, boy, what a character this guy was down there in Florida. First called it off and said, well, okay, I called it off because the people that want to build the mosque or the Islamic Community Center in New York City have agreed to move it away from Ground Zero. And the people in New York were like, what? Who said what to whom? No, that ain't what happened. And, of course, turned out to be the case. The guy was sort of left looking a bit foolish. Apparently, he either misunderstood or was misinformed by somebody down in Florida who was supposedly trying to negotiate some kind of a deal, some kind of a way for this not to happen. The upshot is it didn't happen. He came to New York for some reason, apparently to meet with the people in New York. I don't think they ever met him, though, did they? Not sure. The two things had nothing to do with each other. They had nothing to do with each other. Basically, this guy wanted, Terry Jones wanted this to be a big national issue. He got his wish because of the way the media handled it, the way the media focused on it. And case in point, a number of people, a number of other crazy ministers and people throughout the country also burned Qurans on September 11th. But you didn't hear about them because there wasn't media coverage. Therefore, there were no riots. There were no reactions to this kind of a thing. So it's all in how the media, it's all in how the media portrays it and how much attention they give to it that legitimizes this kind of a thing. That's really all it is. It's a lot of power. And yeah, you know, people will say that, well, it's because we're interested in it that the media covers it. It's a chicken and egg thing. Would we be interested if the media didn't cover it? I suspect we're kind of fueled. We're kind of fueled by how the media actually engages in these stories, what they say is important and what is not important. And in this particular case, they made this such a front page story that everybody was following it. Everybody knew about it. I shouldn't know about these things. I shouldn't have to know about these things. They're stupid. They're a waste of time. They're a bunch of idiots who are trying to fan flames of intolerance and hatred. And yeah, I know they're out there. I know they're out there. I know people like this will always be out there. But why must I be? It's like reading those stupid discussion boards that every newspaper feels compelled to have on their websites. I know there are idiots out there. Why do I have to see the idiots next to the intelligent people as if they're equal when they're not? That's what bugs me. And it's done simply to boost ratings. That really is the only reason that this happens in the first place. I mean, why else? Why else would something so stupid and intolerant be plastered on the front pages every place if it didn't start discussions and sell newspapers and get people to watch television a bit longer? So anyway, at least that's over. At least people have moved on since then. Of course, it's weird, and also proof of how this kind of thing works. Riots continued overseas anyway, even though the thing didn't happen. Apparently, they're on 12-hour delay as far as their CNN feed. Two protesters were killed, four were injured as Afghans protested for a third day against a plan by an American pastor to burn copies of the Islamic holy book. They apparently didn't get the message, and they went around burning tires and chanting death to America. I guess our holy book is tires, right? they weren't burning Bibles, they were burning tires. How dare they? Wow. It's not funny. It's not funny when there are riots and violence and things like that, but it goes to show how people can be manipulated by the media, in this particular case, in a very bad way. And of course, when you have fundamentalism, fundamentalist religion, that is the greatest manipulator of all. And then I saw this other story, which really got me thinking, that the title was Military Burns Unsolicited Bibles Sent to Afghanistan. Yeah, the military's burning Bibles now. Time for more riots, eh? They threw away, ultimately burned, confiscated Bibles that were printed in the two most common Afghan languages, and that was amid concern they'd be used to try and convert Afghans. The unsolicited Bibles sent by a church in the United States were confiscated about a year ago at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan because military rules forbid troops of any religion from proselytizing while deployed there. No proselytizing. I love telling people that. Stop that proselytizing. That's great that they got that word. such a religious outreach can endanger American troops and civilians in the devoutly Muslim nation. The decision was made that it was a forced protection measure to throw them away because if they did get out, it could be perceived by Afghans that the U.S. government or the U.S. military was trying to convert Muslims. And yeah, you know, there's all sorts of intolerance around the world. Why shouldn't Bibles be allowed in Afghanistan? Why shouldn't Bibles be allowed everywhere in the world? But the rest of the world is the rest of the world. Can't control everything. And there are some customs that you better respect, or you're going to see a backlash of sorts. We live in this country. We define the terms of this country, and this country is supposed to be different. This country is supposed to be open. And that's something that I think it's up to all of us to make sure that things like this don't happen. All right. We're going to be taking phone calls in just a little bit. 631-632-9872. I sure hope people are out there. I've got some letters I'd like to read. Should we get into the letters? Okay, first of all, this is a letter concerning something that that we were talking about before.
The quest for Starbucks.
Okay, I was in the middle. I was in the middle of something.
The final 16 profile.
Luzerne.
All right, I was reading the letters. Luzerne. Luzerne is a city in north-central Switzerland, in the German-speaking portion of that country. Due to its location on the shore of Lake Luzerne, within sight of Mount Pilatus and Rigi in the Swiss Alps, Luzerne has long been a destination for tourists. One of the city's famous landmarks is the Chapel Bridge, a wooden bridge first erected in the 14th century. Luzerne has been voted as the fifth most popular tourism destination in the world in 2010 by TripAdvisor. In 1178, Luzerne acquired its independence from the jurisdiction of Merbach Abbey, and the founding of the city proper probably occurred this same year. The city gained importance as a strategically located gateway for the growing commerce from the Gothard trade route. By 1290, Luzerne became a good-sized, self-sufficient city with about 3,000 inhabitants. In 1419, town records show the first witch trial against a male person. On June 17, 2007, voters of the city of Luzerne and the adjacent town of Litau agreed to a merger in a simultaneous referendum. This took effect on January 1, 2010. The new city, still called Luzerne, has a population of around 76,000 people, making it the seventh largest city in Switzerland. The results of this referendum are expected to pave the way for negotiations with other nearby cities and towns in an effort to create a unified city region based on the results of a study. Every year, towards the end of winter, carnival breaks out in the streets, alleyways, and squares of the old town. This is a glittering outdoor party where chaos and merriness reign and nothing is as it normally is. Strange characters in fantastic masks and costumes make their way through the alleyways, while carnival bands blow their instruments in joyful cacophony and thousands of bizarrely clad people sing and dance away the winter. Luzerne Carnival starts every year on the Thursday before Ash Wednesday with a big bang. There are big parades on Dirty Thursday and the following Monday, called Fat Monday, which attract tens of thousands of people. Luzerne's carnival ends with a crowning finish on Fat Tuesday evening with a tremendous parade of big bands, lights, and lanterns. After the parade, all the bands wander through the city playing joyful music. Luzerne, one of the final 16. Okay, I'm going to say something here. I'm all for this, all right? It's fun, it's cool, it's interesting, it's educational. But it's also, it's disrespectful. I'm in the middle of something, middle of reading letters, and all of a sudden the theme comes on. I'm supposed to jump to attention. I'm doing the job. I'm doing the job. I'm reading the script. I'm doing everything just fine. Yeah, I know it's, don't you love when people point to their wrist when they're not wearing a wristwatch? I know it's a time issue. I wonder if that symbol is going to exist in 1,000 years, if people know what it means. Nobody wears wristwatches. Besides that, the point is, let's try and get this coordinated. Here's what I'm going to do. It's 6:40 now. We'll do the next one at 6:50. All right? I'll give the signal. All right. Spiny Norman, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Do you get respect? Do you get enough respect in your life? Because I get the
Not
feeling,
from you.
I don't think I'm getting enough respect. I really don't think.
I notice you don't have a co-host with you, so.
Well, I do now, don't I?
Yeah.
And Mort McCloskey's here, too.
Yeah, there's all the respect you need.
In decades. I haven't seen him in a long time. It's like all these people in the studio, and Finn's over there, and
He asked us if we wanted to hear his imitation of a cat screeching.
Who did?
Mort.
Is that what he does now?
Do you want to hear it?
How long would the cat be screeching for? And this, they couldn't interrupt this. No, of course not. They had to interrupt the letters. Okay, no, tell me how long the cat screeching will go.
For as long as you want it to, I guess.
Well, you know, I don't want cats to be screeching for too long, but sure, why not? It's radio.
Let me get it.
All right, just make sure that doesn't go on infinitely. We don't need this forever. And plus, you know, we do want to take some phone calls, don't we? Is he going to... Are you going to do this, Mart? All right, Mart. This is what you're known for?
Wait a minute. I got to do a couple of push-ups.
I had no idea you had this kind of talent, but...
I operate on a frequency that no one can hear unless you're a cat. So did
really?
You hear it?
So you're doing it now, and
exactly.
I can't hear you because I'm not a cat. That's... I'm going to play this back later for my cat, and we'll see what happens. Thank you, Mort.
My pleasure.
Always, always entertaining. We're going to have a meeting after the show, and we're going to discuss a few things. Here's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to go into delay, and then maybe we'll be able to take some phone calls. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Let's do that. Delay, new people. Interesting conversations.
Hello, this is Henry Rollins, and you're listening to WUSB SUNY Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
And we're in delay. I think we made it. Okay. All right. Our phone number, as I mentioned, is 631-632-9870. Can I get to the damn letters? Please. Is it okay with everybody? You want to take a vote? Cats included? 631-632-9872. You know what? I'm going to take a phone call there because I can do that. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Real quick, I got a buddy of mine who's supposed to be, he does the elections every year, and he had to take a class on how to work in the machines, et cetera, et cetera.
But when you say he does the elections, he doesn't actually... control all the elections. He,
do this, do that, and, helps people do their,
okay.
Whatever they got to do. It's sort of like a chauffeur or something.
And what part of the country is this?
Here in Suffolk County.
Okay, great. So he has his job cut out for him this year.
Yeah. He went to a class probably a month and a half ago. But anyhow, I was just talking to him not too long ago, and he's not really running into any of the issues that you're running into. That you mentioned.
Of course.
There were some other things about, you said something about if you vote and it doesn't register, you don't know it. Apparently, NPR said something about, well, first of all, this is the only state that's still stuck behind using those old school machines. Is that correct?
We were the last state to get rid of the mechanical machines, yes.
But yeah, they were saying that, once you put the ballot in and if it doesn't like something, whatever it is, it tells you immediately. Now, I don't, and that's what my buddy had told me, but you said something different. So
it
really
gives you an error. I've never seen it myself because I never use these machines, but it gives you an error that says the equivalent of error overvote. And just try explaining that to your grandmother, what that means and what you're supposed to do. Apparently, if you click a green button or something, I haven't seen them again, then it'll accept the ballot, but it won't count the vote that there was a problem with, and you won't know what vote that was. Whereas before, the mechanical machine, you just couldn't press two levers down at once because it was programmed not to allow you to do that. I don't see why we can't use a combination of the two so that you physically can't do something and there's a paper trail that's created. And I know you can do this. I know there are other states where the system is much, much better and other countries where the system is better. I just don't understand why we had to get such a silly system that's prone to breakdown.
Well, I mean, I don't really know, why we don't have the same as the rest of the country. But apparently, like you said, until they make, the other machine was idiot-proof until they make a better idiot, I guess. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think the idiots designed this one. I think that's the problem.
Oh, well. Well, I'll let somebody get on and talk.
All right, I'd like to hear how your friend did today, because today obviously was the first big test.
Well, you know what? When I hear from him later on, I will tune in next Tuesday or let you know what goes on.
Awesome. All right. We'll talk to you then.
All right, then. Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, because I can take a phone call if I want to. I don't have to read the letters just because I said I was going to read the letters. All right. I'm still steering the ship. 631-632-9872. Let's read a letter. Now, you know what? Let's take a phone call. Ha, good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Oh, my name is Tom Stock. I'd like to speak about the voting today.
Okay, well, you are on the air right now, Tom, so go ahead.
I've been the first to the polling place in Manorville here for the last 6 years, and when I got my registration card, it said to go online, and I did. I saw the process. It was explained very well within 10 minutes, and I think that it was seamless. For myself, it was, but I'm sure there are many people who don't have the time to go online and look at the website that explains all in pictures. You don't need to even listen to it.
Right.
I thought it was a very easy transition from the old process. The only problem is if you don't fill in the entire circle with the felt tip pen in the private box that you use, the machine will not count it. And I'm sure there are people that will assume the rules without really knowing the rules, and that's...
Right, that's what bothers me. Now, you say that you have to fill in the entire thing. Do you know which vote it's having trouble with, which vote you might not have filled in the entire circle with?
Pardon?
If you get an error of some sort because you didn't fill in the entire bubble or whatever...
It won't count.
It just won't count. You won't know where the error was. It won't give you a chance to correct it.
Website showed an oval, but when I was there, it was a circle.
Uh-huh.
And because I saw the website, I filled it in carefully. There was only a few votes to do, so it only took like 10 seconds.
Right.
But
did you check the other side of the paper? I understand sometimes there are things on the other side of the paper.
It would be some kind of propositions. I did check the other side of the paper.
Okay.
For anybody that hasn't voted yet, I suggest you spend a few minutes just looking. I don't have the website right handy, but I could call you back.
What did you think of the old machines?
I liked them. I liked the sound of them. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that you had to pull this lever. It looked like an electrocution machine.
Yeah, it was psychologically satisfactory. Now, there are technical issues. Fine, I understand that, and they should be addressed. But I think that psychological feeling of something solid... And did you have the same kind of privacy today that you used to have in those machines?
It's just updated, and out with the old, in with the new. We just move along, and I don't know. If it eliminates fraud, I'm all for it.
Well, that's the thing. Does it eliminate fraud? Well, there's no way to really prove that.
Well, that's it. All I have to say, but I thank you for taking my call, because many times when you... say you're going to take calls, you get involved, and
yeah,
it's time to get calls. So
as you can see, it's a circus here. Thank you for your call. Thanks very much. And, lots of times we don't... Mort, do you have another cat for us? No?
No, but I voted today.
You voted today. Hold on.
I'm a live voter. I voted today.
Okay, so tell us what happened.
Well, I got a nice donut. They tried to give me a munchkin, but I insisted.
Trying to influence your vote.
Well, I went in there. I got the donut. Uh-huh. Then they give you a little piece of paper, and they bring you to an open desk. So there's no privacy.
There's no privacy. Why can't you have privacy? Why do they have to design it so you don't have any privacy anymore?
Yeah, what I liked about the old one is when you close the curtain, you can do all sorts of things. You can take off your clothes, and no one sees.
Are you the reason why they changed? Oh, man.
Also.
Okay, go ahead.
Also, since they're giving us a hosing anyway, in the olden days, with the curtains, you can bring in a bucket of water, a soap, and a washcloth, and do an indoor shower.
You're the reason.
And that's it. All of that's gone. It's gone. We can't do that anymore.
Speaking of things that are gone, when you use the pen to fill in the little ovals, how is that pen secured? Can you just take the pen with you, or is it tied to a table?
I didn't even consider trying that. If I thought of it, I would show you the pen right now.
Because if enough people go in there and just swipe all the pens, then all of a sudden they don't have a way
They have more guys there than voters when I went in. There were two voters and about 20 people watching.
I know. They have to tell so many people how to do things.
And my wife had hers rejected because she was marking too many boxes.
Did she know why it was being rejected?
Well, too many. You only vote for one out of like the five running for attorney general.
Okay, so it got rejected. What happened? They gave her
another one.
All right. And basically you have two more tries and then you're out. That's how it works. It just it takes the solemnness out of voting, I think, when it's treated this way.
Well, they allowed you a write-in also.
One write-in per customer.
They allowed you a write-in, and I suggested, you know, what happens? Do they count the write-in? And they said, of course. I said, they didn't count mine. I voted for Mickey Mouse once, and it never showed.
All right, Moore, thanks again.
Thank you.
All right.
Did you hear the cat cry?
I did hear it this time. I did.
Oh, the quest for Starbucks.
Yeah, my fault.
The final 16 profile.
Roseville
is a city in Placer County, California, located in the metropolitan area of Sacramento. As of January 1st, 2009, the population was 112,343, and the population is expected to reach 133,680 by 2015. In CNN Money's Best Places to Live study in 2006, Roseville was ranked the skinniest city in the country with an average body mass index of 24.5. Beginning in the year 1988, the city embarked on a plan for redeveloping the downtown core, comprising about 207 acres of land. Over the past years and into the future, the city is spending tens of millions of dollars on revitalizing its historic areas. The areas have been in decline for a long time. On April 28, 1973, 18 boxcars loaded with bombs en route to the Concord Naval Weapons Station began detonating in the Southern Pacific Railroad yard after one of the cars caught fire. More than 6,000 bombs detonated, injuring more than 350 people. The explosions caused damage to 5,500 buildings up to 6,800 feet away. The cause of the initial car fire has never been determined. In the late 1990s, development in the area by the Union Pacific Railroad uncovered more unexploded ordnance, which were safely contained and destroyed, although not without minor incidents. Roseville, California, one of the final 16. And, again, my apologies. I was the one who said 650, I do that, and yes. Okay, I take responsibility when it's my fault. I learned something. Roseville, you know, I kind of hope it's Roseville, California. I want to check out some of the unexploded ordnance, assuming they didn't get all of it. Little bits of history we're learning about all these places. Although, I got to say, now that I'm in a somewhat better mood, with Luzern in Switzerland, are we pronouncing that right? Because everywhere I look, it's spelled differently. It's spelled like Luzern or something like that. Perhaps one of our listeners over in Switzerland can help us with the pronunciation. We want to get that right. We don't want to pronounce things incorrectly, especially if we go over there. It's interesting, though, reading about Luzern and seeing dates like 1178 and 1290, and basically the cities here in the States, it's 2008 and 2003 and various things like that. It's a little funny. We're going to read a couple of letters. Actually, I can't read this letter. It's too long. Chris writes in regarding comments on August 31st expressing surprise about someone being zealously prosecuted for smuggling cigarettes. Okay, first, cigarettes are taxed at an astronomical rate up to 1,000%. When you buy a pack of smokes, most of what you're paying is taxes. Without them, the pack would cost about $1.50. These taxes are a major revenue source for governments that urge their citizens to quit smoking, many of whom would go broke if people actually did. Different states and countries tax at different rates, so a carton that costs $100 in New York will cost about $30 in South Carolina. With no border controls between states, it's very easy and lucrative for someone to fill his or her car with cigarettes bought in South Carolina and resell them in New York. So New York authorities consider that sort of thing to be depriving them of income, and they go after offenders accordingly. European authorities are even more tax-happy and don't want those prolific European smokers getting their fix without paying the piper. Thank you, Chris, for that information. But, you know, I still have some problems with this. If you're in the same country, I thought there were certain things that went along with being in the same country, and that's basically being free to move something from one place to another, you know, without having to pay all kinds of penalties and duty taxes and things like that. If a carton of cigarettes only cost a third of what it costs in New York and South Carolina, well, the question has to be asked, why is that? Why don't they charge the same? Maybe they should either get some pressure to charge the same or basically accept the reality that, well, if you charge that much less in one part of the country, people are going to be moving things from that part of the country to this part of the country. It's called free enterprise. It's called capitalism. That's how it's supposed to work. Now, yeah, if there were border patrols, if there, it was a different country and we spoke a different language, then it would make sense that, yeah, you'd have to declare things. But since we don't declare things going across state borders, doesn't seem entirely fair to me. And I'm not a very pro-smoking type of a person. And one other letter that we have comes from Kelly in California, wants to know what information that we can get them to get a celebrity to record some new promos. Please tell me. I'll tell my friends and see if I can get one of them to record one for you. Well, you know, Kelly in California, thank you very much for the offer. And I'm hoping that, in fact, you're able to do that. Get us, well, Justin Bieber for a start would be nice. Snoop Dogg, perhaps. He can explain his Hack His Whack contest, things like that. Maybe even Henry Rollins. You know, it'd be nice to have Henry Rollins. We can never seem to get him for some reason. But anybody, just send us the ID. All they have to say is you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook, the greatest station in the world, or something equivalent like that. And, of course, make honorable mention of me as well. That's going to do it for us here tonight. Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Write to us, otw@2600.com. See you next week.
Hey kids, Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook until 9 p.m. Giving away some very special tickets tonight to the Long Island Roller Rebels Roller Derby Bout, where the special guest will be The Undead featuring Bobby Steele, ex-Misfits guitarist. Stay tuned for that.